the valley one day. Down in the valley one day. A meadow was sitting on my way. I'm Dee Mae Roberts, stage and studio. We're listening to a 60s version of There's a Meeting Here Tonight by Joe and Eddie, a black singing duo popular during the 60s. The gospel version of this song will be featured in Passin' Arts, a theater company's return production of Black Nativity. This gospel musical play runs December 2nd through December 18th. We're going to hear about the history of this Langston Hughes work for the holiday season. Plus, at the end of the show, I have a few thoughts about what happened last week, which includes a short piece with Joanne Hardesty. So stay tuned. This is Stage and Studio.
There's a meeting here tonight. I can tell by your friendly face. There's a meeting here tonight. Well, Satan is mad and I am glad. Satan got mad and I am glad.
I'm Dee Mae Roberts. What a huge difference a week can bring. I mean, we are heading into more unsure times in 2017, and we can all use some joyful music and peaceful celebrations. With me in the KBOO studio are Artistic Director and Director Jerry Foster. Welcome to Stage and Studio.
Thank you for having me.
And cast member Lorene Jackson, otherwise known as Coco Jackson.
Thank you as well for having me.
Welcome. You're both from Passin' Art, a theater company's Black Nativity, and I want to welcome you both to Stage and Studio. Jerry, I don't know if you've been on this show before.
You know?
We've known each other forever.
Exactly.
So welcome both. Both first-timers. Originally produced off-Broadway in 1961, Black Nativity is Langston Hughes' self-described gospel song play. Mm-hmm. Jerry, how many times has Passin' Art done this show?
This will be our fifth. The first time we did it was in 1996, and we did it with all young people, and then again in 1997, again with all young people, and people had been wanting to hear us do this play, you know, with an all-adult version of it, and it took a while and some prodding to get it done, but, you know, we're glad to be bringing it to the community.
Only five times. Well, Black Nativity first featured a famed dancer. I was reading about this, Alvin Ailey. Mm-hmm. And when it was originally called Wasn't It a Mighty Day?
Yes.
And since then, the musical play has been performed internationally at the Spoleto Festival of Two Worlds in Italy and annually for many years in cities like Boston and Seattle. Has Black Nativity changed much since 1961 from that original production? Is it still the same mix of storytelling and music and dance?
It's the same mix, but, you know, the songs are intertwined differently. And a lot of the original songs were basically old gospel tunes, you know. And so as it progressed through the years, people were able to do different variations on the songs.
Has Passin' Arts changed? I mean, obviously, since it was a kids' production and more adult, I mean, that in anything else?
Or? Oh, yeah. I mean, just to come hear it, you will have a musical experience of your life, you know. Because one of the things that we do with it is that we don't use microphones for the singing, and we use minimal musicians, you know. We focus in on just the singing itself as well as the words. And this year, we're looking at doing a lot of the harmonies, working with a lot of harmony, you know. And it's an experience, and it's fun, you know. And, you know, you've been in theater and had some good times and some rough times, and particularly in rehearsals, you know. But trying to get to a rehearsal here, you can't wait. You know, you're constantly looking at the
clock.
Because
it's so enjoyable.
It really is. It really is.
I mean, it really sounds like a community of people who are pulling together to put together this play in, you know, to make it more joyful, to make it more celebratory.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And they enjoy what they're doing, and you can see that. And when they're performing, and you can hear it as they sing, that they're enjoying what they're doing. And as an audience member, you would enjoy it too.
You're so enthused, Jerry. A lot of times you can be so serious, and, you know, here you're smiling about this. I think this is a very positive sign here. In case you just joined us, I'm Dee Mae Roberts, Stage and Studio, with my guest, director Jerry Foster, and cast member Lorene Jackson, mm-hmm. Coco Jackson. And they're from Passin' Art, a theater company's production
of Black Nativity, which is happening in December. And the show runs December 2nd through December 18th at the Greater St. Stephen's Missionary Baptist Church. I can't see. The St. Stephen's Missionary Baptist Church. That's located at 3605 Northeast Mallory Avenue in Portland. And for tickets, you can visit passinart.net. And I actually want to talk with Coco. Tell us about what you perform in Black Nativity.
I sing a few songs, little short versions, and then I do a very special song, special to my heart as well, and that's the Sweet Little Jesus Boy. I do that while Mary is dancing, and so that's just a nice little ensemble there.
Because the story is about the nativity.
Yes, it is.
But is it told in a different way? How is it told?
It's told in a version, the Black version of Black Nativity, and how we portray Black Nativity and Black Little Jesus, and how we express our feelings and our, yeah.
When you're talking about Black Nativity, mm-hmm. you have to talk about why it was done. You
know, right.
Let's talk about that.
There was not any plays or anything written for African Americans. And for Langston, you know, coming through the Renaissance era, you know, and there were a lot of others that were there.
The Harlem Renaissance.
Exactly. He wanted to be able to have something that all people can enjoy, but he wanted to have a totally Black cast doing it. And when, like you say, when they did it, Avenatti was a part of it. And he left shortly before the play opened because the original name wasn't that a Mighty Day. And so when they changed the Black Nativity, well, you know, he left.
But he didn't like that.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't. But you know, when you as an artist, you want to continue to help put that information out there the way a writer wrote it, you know. And again, times have changed, and we have to make adjustments. And when you do that, you know, you have to get those people involved to help do that. But the play itself was set again to gospel spirituals, you know, and they had over 160 members doing that, and they had dancers
on stage,
as well as with Mary and Joseph, who didn't talk, but they were part of that whole.
But
group.
The story is that it's a Black Mary, a Black Joseph.
The story isn't
about
the
Jesus.
The story is about the Nativity of Christ set to gospel music.
Right.
So you know how you want to interpret that.
Exactly.
And the thing about it is that we're not trying to push religion on anyone. We're just trying to entertain, okay, and to give you a spirit and uplift, you know.
I was going to ask you about that because I'm not spiritual.
Right.
I mean, I'm actually religious. I am spiritual. But any denomination,
any faith can
relate
to this? We had people who came last year, and there was one person who said, when I was talking to them, they were saying that, well, I don't believe. I said, okay, it's okay. Just come and enjoy the singing. Yes. And they came and enjoyed the singing and really, really got, you know, had a great experience with that. You know, so
the music must be incredible.
It's awesome.
It's awesome. Fun, you know, just to sit back and just hear singers, you know.
Well, I that is enticing me. So, Coco, I know you're a singer.
Yes.
And it's kind of a tradition on stage and studio that I ask singers to sing just a little bit, even like 30 seconds or a minute. Would you be willing to do that?
Yes, I will.
Well, I'm going to alert our engineer, Judy, to kind of watch this because she's going to be singing now. So I imagine you have a powerful voice, so you might want to lean back a little bit. Okay. This is live radio. Anytime.
Sweet little Jesus boy, they made you be born in a manger, Lord. Sweet little holy child, didn't know who you was. didn't know you'd come down to save us, Lord, to take our sins away. Our eyes were blind, we could not see. Didn't know who you was.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you, Judy, our engineer, for watching those levels there. That was awesome. You do have a powerful voice. And I know you were holding back. You were holding back.
Of course.
I can imagine you in the church singing. Oh, my gosh. I'm sure
it's opening night.
Opening night. Save it. Yeah.
It's interesting in doing this play and actually doing it in a church. You know, we were looking at taking things back to basic, you know. With just the singing and the whole bit, you know how everyone has been in a little white church, you know. And I know for me and my experience in a little white church, we didn't have all of the tambourines, the drums, the piano. It was just a small church, but it was the voices that really carried the services themselves. And to see people in the summertime just leaning in the windows, you know, with the windows on, because we didn't have our air conditioning.
To listen.
Exactly. Yeah, we didn't have our air conditioning, nor did we have fans. You know, we had little hand fans or whatever you can get yourself, use a fan yourself off with. But it was a great experience. And so that is what we wanted to replicate here. Is a great experience.
Oh, well, yes. It sounds lovely, and thank you, Coco, for singing.
Thank you.
How long have you been with, have you done other Passing Art shows before?
This is my second year with Passing Art.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, her son was in Black Nativity when we did it with the kids.
Yes. Oh, so there is a tradition.
Her son and nephew.
And my nephew. Yes,
yes.
Well, let's hear, how many people do you have, Jerry? I mean, how big is the cast?
The cast is...
And the performers.
Is a total cast of 14. There are 12 singers and two
and
dancers.
And musicians, too?
And musicians, also.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So it's a full ensemble.
Yes, it is. It's not as big as it was when they did
it
back in 61.
People, yeah. but you definitely fill the space.
Exactly.
With sound.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I imagine there are some pretty fantastic singers with you.
Oh,
Coco.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome singers. Anointed singers.
Who's your musical director?
Jarrell Martin.
I imagine there's
a lot of work there. I had to think about that for a minute.
Well,
but he's also being assisted by Quante Coles.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like a wonderful experience, too. You know, Coco, have you been in other productions, though?
Yes. My very first production was with Black Repertory Theater. I played Dorothy in The Wiz.
Oh.
I played 7 scenes, and I believe it was that production. I was awarded by the NAACP for the Best Youth Actress.
Wonderful.
And that was directed by Rosemary Allen.
Wow. So are you sort of making a comeback with this?
Oh, yeah. It's been a long time coming.
Yeah. How does it feel to be, you know, when I talk to actors of color and performers of color, a lot of times, especially in Portland, you know, you can sometimes be the only one of color in a production, right?
Yes.
How does it feel for you to be in an all-Black ensemble?
Very connecting. An ensemble that I can really... identify with, connect with, go to the edge of wherever with, no holding back. It's awesome.
Well, it's probably community building as well.
Yes.
And it probably is great to be in a room where you don't have to explain a lot of things.
That's true, too, as well. Yes. Oh, yes.
Which is often the case when you're doing, you know, any kind of arts in Portland. And that's why I like Passing Art, because you really keep the conversation going. How long has Passing Art been around, Jerry?
Since 1982.
It's been quite
a
long time.
And, and during that time, there were two other Black theater companies.
Well, what were
Portland,
they?
Portland Black Repertory
right,
Theater,
right, which you mentioned,
which yes. was the which was a professional company, mm-hmm. and then Sojourner Truth Theater, which was a community theater. And so there was three of us. And one of the things that we had a mutual agreement that when one was up, everybody
else
compete.
Would
be down. Exactly.
And I think we should do more of that, even with all the companies of color.
And we also use pretty much the same actors, you know, so which gave everybody some work. And all through the year. And one of the things with Passing Art is that we like bringing people in from the community and, you know, giving them an opportunity to live out their dream, if their dream is to be on the stage or to be a part of a production, you know, and that's how we continue to keep it going. Also utilizing bringing the kids in our production, like our last production with Smoldering Fires, which had kids in it, and they were the lead roles in that play. Very powerful play, you know, and just to see them do that and take ownership with that, you know, really said a whole lot, you know, for us. And if they decide to pursue theater, at least they say that they've had that experience on stage, you know, something that came a kickstart.
And training is important, right? And that's how
definitely.
You get the training.
Definitely.
It's by experience.
Definitely.
That's right.
And a lot of times, you know, they decided they don't want to go and they don't want to be on
fine
the stage.
Too.
But at the same time, the experience itself gives them a thought and an idea that they want to go ahead and be in the audience to support that. You know?
Exactly. So you are building, you know, building not just artists but also patrons in
correct,
the future.
Correct.
So what are some of the other projects coming up for Passing Art in the coming year?
Wow. We have our Sons project that's coming up. And then Our Sons project consists of the play, The Gospel of Loving Kindness. We're looking at doing 4 community gatherings around the art exhibit that we're bringing in called Kin Killing Kin.
So Kin Killing Kin.
Kin Killing Kin. It's K-I-N, Killing K-I-N.
Yeah, so it deals with murder then?
Deals with young men with guns, mm-hmm. but also, too, in the artwork by James Pate, he weaves in history, the civil rights struggle, whereas even the young men that are in there are wearing Klan hats. So, you know, which is symbolic of racism. It doesn't talk about it, but it's symbolic of it. But you look at where we came from and where we are today.
You were ahead of this. You know, last week obviously has been a just tumultuous time for all of us, you know.
Yes.
And you were ahead of that by bringing this exhibit. I mean, because it is something that is happening in the community, and it is something that we need to discuss. It seems like that project is even more relevant than ever.
Definitely, definitely. You know, we want to be able to get everyone together to not only to identify solutions, but to promote peace, you know, to have discussions, collaborative problem solving, and also make new connections. You know, that's what this project is about, you know, and we're hoping that folks will get out to see the art exhibit. Oh, it's a very powerful art exhibit. And if you can...
When is that happening?
That's February. It opens February the 23rd for the art exhibit. And it'll be at the Interstate Firehouse Cultural Center.
That's awesome.
And it'll close on April 2nd.
And then you're going to have community talks and probably short performances in connection
around
with that, too.
And
that's a huge project.
Different sections of the city. Oh, yes, it is. That's a production in itself.
Well, kudos to you for doing that, Jerry. I know it's hard. I mean, the arts, you know, always have a hard time, but do you see it becoming worse in the coming years, in the next 4 years?
I think that no matter what happens, art is about releasing. You know, it's about educating. It's about entertaining, which we like to say edutaining. It's about inspiring the people who come and watch what we do, you know, particularly when it continue to address the critical issues that is a face in our community. You know, I see it as a way of continuing to be that outlet of release.
And Black Nativity as a production will offer some hope.
Oh, yes.
Coco,
definitely.
Right?
Yes.
And, you know, especially for the coming years, you know, and the coming year. So it's a good way to actually close out the year with the holiday season, too.
Definitely, definitely.
Passing Art Theater Company's Black Nativity runs through December 2nd, December 18th at the Greater St. Stephen's Missionary Baptist Church, and that's located at 3605 Northeast Mallory Avenue in Portland. And for tickets, visit Passin, that's PassinArt, PassinArt.net. And I have that info at stageandstudio.org and kbu.fm/stageandstudio. I just want to, you know, say to you on a personal level, Jerry, I know that you've been, you know, here as long as I've been in Portland, and you have really, you know, pushed forward Passin Art. It's a struggle, you know, and I know a lot of it, you're just pulling together single-handedly sometimes, but it's a necessary community arts group that we need to have here in Portland. So kudos to you.
Thank you.
For
Thank you.
Keeping going.
Thank you. Passin Art isn't about me. Passin Art is about
a whole
you
community of people.
And
yes.
It's the community that keeps it going. You know, yeah. I always say that we provide the limo. And we just need people to help put gas in the limo so that we can, so we don't have to just go up the street, that we
well,
can
you
go.
You can't do it by yourself.
We can go
obviously.
Down the freeway. Okay?
No, right. Absolutely cannot. We can't do anything by ourselves anymore. Most definitely. We never could. Jerry Foster and Lorene Coco Jackson, thank you for being here today.
Thank
and for
you.
For talking about Black Nativity, and have a beautiful opening.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, we hope to see you there.
I can't wait to hear you sing more, Coco.
Why, thank you.
So that means you'll be there, right?
I definitely will. I don't want to miss this one. So I just have a personal statement I'd like to make that in no way reflects the opinions or the policies of KBOO. Since last week, like many Americans, I've gone through 5 stages of post-election grief. I continue to converse with shocked friends, people of color, LGBTQs, Muslims, immigrants, and refugees who express fear but yet aren't shocked as my white friends are. For marginalized people used to dealing with racism, the outcome of the election wasn't as surprising. It was sad, but it wasn't as surprising. This election was the most polarizing one for America. Media journalists somehow didn't cover the class differences that this election revealed. And in many ways, the results showed the dissatisfaction many Americans feel about the two-party system and the Electoral College. After we elected a biracial African-American president, I thought we were making progress. Most of us did. I, for one, benefited from Obamacare and a return to a time when race and culture issues could be openly talked about. The arts and public media, which had seen more cuts during previous administrations, seemed to have more support. President Obama didn't make everyone happy. No president can. But he reduced unemployment, created job growth, improved conditions for women, people of color, and LGBTQs, and immigrants. He did much more, but it would take way too long to list it. Perhaps the biggest issue in this election is the Electoral College. And for the 5th time in the voting history of the U.S. and the 2nd time in 16 years, a presidential candidate has won the White House despite losing the popular vote. The Electoral College itself is a system with roots in slavery that was started by James Madison. I take comfort from my recent talk with Joanne Hardesty, president of the Portland chapter of the NAACP and longtime KBOO host of Voices from the Edge. In a conversation I recorded last week, she told me that she often talks with people who are not like-minded, and she routinely has difficult conversations in order to listen as an act of social change. I talk with Joanne Hardesty about how she creates change through the uncomfortable spaces of differing views.
Well, I mean, you have to acknowledge your emotion. And sometimes it's just okay to say, you know, that really hit me hard. And I just have to go take care of myself for a moment, right? I'm going to go and spend about 5 minutes and I'll come back. And maybe we can pick up today. Maybe we'll pick it up at another date. But you have to be able to verbalize that, right? So that people know what you're feeling, right? Because if you just got up and left, then the person that who you were talking to may think, well, that's the end. We're never going to have a conversation again, right? And so it's okay to be emotional, but just verbalize it, right? I didn't like that. And I'm going to tell you why I didn't like that. I do a training on interrupting oppressive language. And I give people like a step-by-step thing, you know, first breathe, then state what it was you didn't like, state what you need from the person who said it, and then give them an opportunity to reflect and come back if they'd like, right? And so it's a like a 3-step process, but what it does is really it lets people know right away, okay, I was not comfortable with that statement, here's why, and here's what I need from you. And then, you know, you come back and you try again the next day. I think most people want to do better, and I think most people are still learning, right? Unlearning the racism that they've been brought up with, that they've seen and experienced, but also that most people want to do better. I mean, there certainly is a group of people that think that they're already perfect and they don't have to change. And I don't even waste time in that side, right? Because there are too many of us that really want to do good work and want to figure out how we work together, how we build a better community, how we support each other. I think one of the most critical things we can do right now is to create safe spaces where all our community can feel safe. Because we don't know when it's going to hit us that, you know, you could be riding down the street and all of a sudden see a car with a Confederate flag and you think, whoa, right? Where do I go to be safe, right? We need to create all kind of safe spaces, and we need to create a symbol that lets people know this is a safe place. If you're feeling uncomfortable, if you're feeling like this is like not right, this is a place you can go to and just be for a moment.
Like we could put in our houses or something?
Exactly, right? Like you could put a sign in your window or something like this is a safe, this is a sanctuary. We are a sanctuary, right? We're going to need a lot more of those, because I do think that people that don't want this multicultural community, this multicultural society, have been emboldened by both the verdict with the Bundy trial. They've been emboldened by what we perceive as the outcome for this election cycle. And so they're going to be much more verbal and public because it's become okay through this election cycle to do that. And so what we, people of goodwill, are going to have to do is make sure that there are enough safe spaces for everybody who needs it.
I think it's already started happening. I mean, I know it has around the country that people have been, and in your words, which is a great word, emboldened.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, yeah, I'm hearing about more hate crimes and hearing about people just calling people the N-word and just telling, oh, yeah, you're gonna be out of here. You're going to be gone soon.
Or go back home.
Or go back home, yes. So it's going to, but, you know, what I'm hopeful of is the unlikely people who we encounter in our community all start saying, that's not okay, publicly, right? Just taking a visible stand. I'm sorry, hate's not okay here, right? We're not going to, that's not who we are. That's not how we're going to live in this community, right?
I like that, the unlikely people.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yep. Yeah. I'd love to see many more of those unlikely people, because that's what it's going to take. It's going to have to take those unlikely people to step in that void and create that space so that the rest of us can be safe, as, you know, but for the grace of God, who knows?
That was from my talk with Joanne Hardesty, president of the Portland chapter of the NAACP. For me, it's more important than ever to unify with other marginalized groups and to have honest conversations with those who have different views from us. I still believe in making America a hate-free place to live where all people can find equality and opportunity. That's it for Stage and Studio. You can hear the show again on stageandstudio.org, or you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or like us on facebook.com/stage_studio. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts. We're going to go out with music with David Arnett Cherry at davidarnettcherry.com.